Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us on this Aloha Friday, June 6th. Today, we've got a Hanaho show featuring interviews with the creative minds behind Cirque du Soleil Awana, Hawaii's first resident Cirque show. The show debuted 6 months ago. Our conversations, stretching back as far as 2023, highlight the creativity and talent involved in the show. We talk with one of the show's cultural experts during the first round of auditions. What does a production done Waikiki style look like? We Hanaho our on-site interviews just as Awana was preparing to open, delving into the costuming and performers and highlighting a local boy in the spotlight. We check in with a hula dancer who's been performing nightly in the show.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from PAR Hawaii, committed to meeting the energy needs of Hawaii and supporting community nonprofit organizations across the islands. Learn more at parhawaii.com.
A proposal to cut federal funding to public media has made it to Congress. If passed, these cuts would impact HPR's ability to serve Hawaii and devastate smaller, rural stations across the country. Stand up for HPR and public media. Visit hawaiipublicradio.org/protect.
Support for HPR comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa, offering the global MBA with 21-month, 24-month, and 36-month options. Learn more at scheidler.hawaii.edu.
Welcome back to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. You know, Memorial Day marked the unofficial start to the summer season. For some, on vacation or staycations, that might mean taking in a performance of Awana, Cirque du Soleil's first resident show here in Hawaii. Our show today collects interviews throughout the creation of the show. Initial auditions for Awana were held last fall. Close to 100 hula dancers showed up for the first day of tryouts alone, with many more candidates to come in the following days. We spoke to Aaron Salah, one of the creative forces behind the show, as those auditions were winding down with musicians who were hoping to be chosen as part of the production.
It is a fascinating journey for me, just as a creative doing work with Hawaii, in Hawaiian storytelling, doing work with Hawaiian talent, but also then the engagement with a global brand like Cirque du Soleil is something I think that, I don't know, there's a profundity about it, but there's also this poignance about the usage of a vehicle like Cirque du Soleil and Cirque du Soleil's ways of storytelling and bringing that together with Hawaiian stories. I think that's a really powerful combination, and we're excited to be collaborating and integrating in this way.
Well, you know, I just think what a fabulous opportunity for dancers, musicians, artists, you know, to elevate the wonderful culture that is Hawaii.
Absolutely agreed.
It's almost as if, you know, it's really like a pinnacle. You know, we've seen so much emerge just with fashion, let's say, and then just our rich history with music and dance. But to have this venue, and boy, you know, Waikiki has needed, you know, some attraction there for decades.
Cirque is going to be in the old Magic of Polynesia showroom across the street at the Beachcomber. That space, to activate that space that is, you know, just adjacent to the international marketplace, even that, right, is a fascinating storytelling vehicle with the history and the genealogy of the international marketplace, what became sort of, you know, Don Beach and the Waikiki Beachcomber, and just that whole bit with, you know, Don Ho performed there. Bella Richards used to have a hula show at the international marketplace. And so the engagement of this kind of production, dare I say spectacle, with that genealogy, this kind of talent is, gosh, you know, just amazing. It's fascinating to be part of this storytelling endeavor.
And so at the core, you know, how large will this Cirque du Soleil team be?
The production team, that is performers on stage, we're looking at about 35. The back of house and production team, we're not quite sure what that takes it, but the vast majority of production will be local talent. For me, it's one of those things we can hang our hat on, that part of the work that we're doing is really bringing local talent to the stage and to the backstage and to the house. You know, I think that's an important piece. And then attached to that is that now this talent finds itself inside of a global brand that has productions really all over the world. And so the potential then for this talent to find themselves in Shanghai, to find themselves, you know, in Europe, to find themselves across America, I think is something really important for us to stay with, you know?
Well, I have talked to a couple of people from Hawaii who were able to get in Cirque shows, let's say in Vegas.
Right.
I don't know if they have a desire to come home and be a part of this production, but it just is, oh my gosh, the opportunity, it seems, is just so incredible for what it could do locally as just a new venue, a new show in town. And then, yes, like you said, opportunities for our talent to go abroad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've sort of been sharing this story, and it's anecdotal, but Cirque du Soleil had its beginnings in Hawaii, in the sense that Guy, the founder of Cirque, found himself watching people and wondered to himself, a production entity like Cirque that was around watching people rather than watching animals and sort of the traditional circus act, found himself looking at the Kona sunset and born as Cirque du Soleil, the Circus of the Sun. I think this, you know, this sort of full round returning home is really important. And for me, that's part of the poignance of this project, is that Cirque is really coming home to Hawaii.
Well, I just had the opportunity to talk to Kumuhula Patrick Makuakane, you know, who was celebrated for his innovation and, you know, putting it on that stage at that level, you know, just for his art.
Yeah, absolutely agreed.
To think that we could, you know, do something here, you know, it's like you've got all the ingredients.
Yeah. You know, Patrick is he's a genius, literally in the literal sense these days with the incredible awards that he's been garnering. There is a tremendous amount of courage that Patrick has amassed over the years to do the kind of work that he's done in the environment that he has done that work in. And part of it is that, you know, San Francisco has lent itself to elevating, you know, Patrick, challenging him to be the best that he possibly can be in the creative space that he is in. And I think, you know, there's something to be said about how Patrick thinks about hula and his hula mua. And for us, I think for us home, right? So where home tends to really hold steadfast to tradition in a way that, in a way that really sort of colors how we play outside the playground, or we color outside the lines, right? There is a dynamism that is connected to that, that I think home really wants for us to stay grounded in a historical way. And I think when you have a vehicle like Cirque that affords us the ability to be creative inside of that cultural space, I think is, again, I mean, forgive me, I keep coming back to this word for me as we go on this journey, but it's fascinating, it's amazing, it's dynamic. And so the goal really is for us to challenge ourselves to be the best version of ourselves creatively, to be the best version of ourselves in addition to that culturally. And so it's an amazing journey. It's an amazing story to be telling right now.
Well, I think, you know, just the whole creative process, you know, you want to explore outside the lines, right? And you want to give yourself permission to see what's possible.
That's absolutely right. So we have, you know, we have a cultural team in Kumuhula Hiva Vaughn, in fashion designer and hula practitioner himself, Manola, you know, and so this cultural team is really coming together, you know, on one hand, challenge ourselves to step out and be brave, and on the other hand, keep us in check, right? So we have this creative team that is inclusive of Cirque's creative team, that is inclusive of us, really having these dynamic discussions about what is possible and where we, you know, where we can step out and where we really should rein things in. And, I, you know, if I'm being honest, part of the where we find ourselves reining each other in is really in cultural process. In terms of the practice itself, we're really challenging ourselves to step out a bit and really to be courageous, to be brave in the moment of creativity.
So are we going to see, like, high wire acts? How does this all work with hula?
Well, I'm going to leave some of the suspense on that. We do have a series of really incredible acts that will be gracing the stage. And on one hand, they'll be supplementing, you know, supplementary to beautiful hula. And in other ways, Hula will be supplementing the incredible feats that we'll see humans, you know, participate in. And so it's really a feast for the eyes, for the ears, you know, it's a feast for the senses to partake in the production.
Well, I just can't wait. And so the target date for opening is when again?
Yeah, we're still looking at the end of 2024. So hoping for tickets to go on sale mid-2024, somewhere around May.
Okay, so you have a year to build this show.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
All right. Are you going anywhere else for tryouts?
Yeah. Funny. Yeah. Interesting. You asked the question because we are talking about it, and mostly because there's quite a population of Hawaiians and, you know, other Pacific Islanders on the West Coast, and so, you know, that's in consideration. What we are really being keen to do is to highlight the stories of place, right? So the Beachcomber showroom is on a parcel of land called Kalu'okau in Waikiki. It's owned by Queen Emma. And so really being keen on telling the story of Queen Emma, telling the story of Waikiki, telling the story of Oahu, and then telling the story of Hawaii. So we're being honorific of place and of people connected to this piece of aina.
That was Aaron Salah talking to us about Cirque du Soleil's Awana back in 2023. The production was just starting to ramp up in Waikiki. Months before the show premiered, we also spoke with Awana's composer and musical director, Evan Duffy. He was in Honolulu in April of last year, working with Taimani Gardner and other local musicians to blend the unique Cirque style with what makes Hawaii special.
It's been so amazing. I've just kind of come off about 50% of the composing process. So I'm about at the halfway point right now, which I thought was a really wonderful place to start bringing in musicians. So I've been out here for the last week recording Taimane, a bunch of other local musicians. I'm only working with musicians from the islands, which is really exciting and educational for me and just inspiring. So yeah, we're just kind of like going in and we're recording some specific parts that have been, you know, written out. We're also getting a little bit hands-on in there, and I'm directing the musicians and just saying, hey, you did this thing on the last take, and that was actually really cool. What if we did this? So it's kind of molding, you know, these musicians are so brilliant that it's really easy and a luxury for me to go in there and on the fly have them try things and experiment. So I'm going to take those recordings back to my studio and start fitting them into the pieces and twisting them around and seeing what kind of weird sounds we can make. So it's a fun part of the process right now. Very fun.
Well, for Cirque du Soleil fans who just love the music, how do you meld what Cirque fans are used to and then a show like this?
Sure. Like, we stand on the shoulders of giants, sort of, right? Of how, you know, do we pay respect also to the Cirque world that's come before us. You know, it's a pretty hands-off process, and at least in the beginning, you know, Cirque is great at hiring people that they trust, of which I'm very, consider myself being very lucky to be in that pool, and that they enjoy their art. So they really let me do my thing, and then, you know, filter it through the natural creative team of our director, Neil Dorward, our producers, our cultural team, and then by the time it makes its way up to the top, you know, they've been pretty excited about everything, which has been really nice. We haven't really hit any moments where they're like, hey, this is cool, but what if we did this? So I feel very trusted as an artist and a composer on this process. And I'm a huge fan of all those shows too. Alegria and Ka. I finally got to see Ka last year in Las Vegas, and that was just a treat. So yeah, a lot of research for the Hawaiian music side of it, but then a lot of research into the Cirque du Soleil lineage and making sure that we're also doing a continuation of that, but also not being afraid to push those boundaries as well. You know, I come from a film scoring and a songwriting background. There's so much of Cirque's music that is very cinematic, and you could drop over a film and it would be completely at home. And I think, you know, that's even more demonstrated by, we've had a lot of wonderful legacy film composers do Cirque scores from, you know, a few years ago. I think there was a Danny Elfman show in Los Angeles, which was amazing. And so, yeah, it's a natural, you know, kind of tangential thing to what I'm doing most of the rest of the year on other projects. So it's a pretty easy transition. And if I weren't so trusted, it would maybe be more difficult, but like, I feel so taken care of over there. So they really just let me do my thing. And yeah, it's fun.
As you've just then been immersed in the culture here, what are you struck by?
I'm struck by most, you know, you'll get this in some other places, but not in the density that you have out here in the islands is that everybody's a multi-instrumentalist, and not just like, oh yeah, I play a little bit of this, but they're fantastic at multiple disciplines. We're working with an amazing musician out here who's a huge inspiration, John Signor, and he, you know, makes his own nose flutes and he plays it better than anybody you've ever heard. He also plays guitar, he sings, he plays an assortment of percussion, and he's phenomenal at all that. And the other thing I've noticed is that there's so many people like that that have these incredible skills at guitar, ukulele, singing, whereas, you know, somewhere like Nashville or Los Angeles or anywhere else, you might find an incredible guitarist, but that's maybe all they focus on. They're not as much, or yes, an incredible songwriter, but that's what they do. They don't perform, they don't do studio stuff. So I think that that says something truly about the culture traditionally, but then even current modern culture out here in Hawaii, that there's such an emphasis on musicality, and it's a heartbeat for everybody out here to say, oh, you're playing guitar today? Cool, I'll hop on the drums, the pahu or the ipuheke, and I'll do what I'm doing, and it doesn't matter. Like, I'll learn, I'll become proficient in that. So it's very intimidating how good everybody is at various things.
Well, you know, you can't have mele without ole, so how much chanting are you working in there?
Right. So that's a very exciting process for me, especially. I love vocals across the board, whether it's a pop hook or whether it's choral music like Eric Whitaker or, you know, some of the Queen's music, especially, you know, lends itself so well to choral writing. And chant especially, that's something we're very closely working with Aaron Sla and Eva Vaughn on, to make sure that, you know, we're doing it very appropriately and that we're using it where we should use it, we're not using it where we shouldn't. The Hawaiian language, to speak to the technicality of that and how it goes into the music, is so fun to work with because it oscillates between very lyrical and it oscillates between very percussive. And so that is just, I mean, we have so many, you know, beautiful words that start with K's, for example. And that lends itself so great to, you know, a very percussive driving line. And sometimes in these acts, you know, we're taking so much inspiration from the actual artists that are going to be performing these sections of the show. Sometimes you really need to build that tension. So with a versatile language and all these wonderful meles that are pre-existing or ones that are created new for the show, it's very easy to just go, okay, here's our text and what we're trying to say, and here's the act and what that's trying to say, marry those two together and really have a vocally led moment too. So it's fun.
That was Evan Duffy, composer for Cirque du Soleil's Awana. He's based in Los Angeles, but was on island last year to begin the process of hiring musicians for the show, which opened at the Outrigger Waikiki Beachcomber Hotel on December 17th. And full disclosure, Outrigger Hospitality Group is an underwriter of HPR. You're listening to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Our show today, Hana Ho's interviews about the making and performance of Awana, Hawaii's first resident Cirque du Soleil show. Awana's arrival in Waikiki last year represented an opportunity to showcase not just Hawaiian culture, but Hawaii talent too. Fashion designer Manaʻole Yap is a big part of that. Working on the show was a return to his roots as a costume designer. When we spoke to him last December, he told us about a faded night at his home on the Big Island. It was there that he saw a ring around the moon, a moonbow, and he took it as a sign that he was destined to be a part of this artistic endeavor. The energy that you bring to the designs, you know, whether, you know, we're wearing it, but to see it on stage, it is pretty impressive. Do you have a favorite scene or any favorites in the show?
It's really hard because we've come so intimately involved in all the pieces of the show, you know, even on a personal level, you know, getting involved with the storytelling. And I think if I had to choose one of my most favorite scenes, I would have to say it's probably Hina, just because of, you know, the moonscape pulls you into, you know, the night sky, but just the environment that we're able to transcend and go into another space in that scene and really just dream. And that dream state is truly alive in that Hina scene. But everything from the costuming to the, not just the acrobatic costuming, but even like other performance costumes, like the skirt that shows the movements and the gravitational pull between the moon and the tides, and seeing that come to life with the movement of the acrobat and the lyra is just sensational.
You know, I have talked to people who have been up to your home, you know, up on the Mauna, and they just describe how special it is, how spiritual it is, you know, and you draw from that inspiration.
Absolutely. You know, I think as artists, we're always, we come from a place of inspiration, right? We receive inspiration, we internalize it, and then we express it again, right? Through our compositions, whether it's, you know, songs or artwork, painting, fashion, whatever it may be. But really, it's important for us to always have a sense of place and a sense of grounding. And that truly is our home, you know? And I think that every time I go back home, it's almost like returning to a spring, you know, that rush of energy of just being able to drink from it and to be nourished and to just feel that vitality. Every time I go home is important. And it transcends beyond us, right, in our artwork, and you see it push through in many pieces and parts of our arts.
You know, after living here for so long, I mean, I used to say, oh, I hate Waikiki, but I love Waikiki, and being able to walk through here and seeing it, you know, before the pandemic and during the pandemic and post-pandemic, you know, there's just something really special about Waikiki. And so the scene that, you know, the one segment Hawaii Calls, and, you know, it is what it is today, but you just know there's really something special here at the core of Waikiki.
Absolutely. You know, when we put, you know, when that scene was brought into the spectrum, it was important for us to honor that time period of that first interaction. You know, we touch on a lot of voyaging in the beginning, which, you know, you'll get to see when you see the whole show, but voyaging in different time periods, right? And the experience of what people were having, you know, when they arrived here. But what's really neat in that scene is the fact that a big part, like Kumu Hiva Van has really elaborated on, is really the bringing back and restoring of light to this place that is Waikiki. You know, Waikiki has definitely seen many years of change, you know, not all good. But in that scene, we've really, you know, through Keao's hakumele, his lyrics, the costume design, and the hula, we have embedded a lot of beautiful poetry and kauna that speaks to the idea of Waikiki being a place of rest, rejuvenation. And although, you know, the visual scene of what Waikiki is today has definitely been, you know, developed in a very robust way, we still have to come here and really celebrate the land for what it is. And I think opportunities like this Cirque du Soleil show, where there's storytelling involved through the hula, through the mele, there's definitely a beautiful aloha, a beautiful reciprocal exchange that happens in a spiritual way, in a deeper way, in a meaningful way through the storytelling that really allows us to restore our native voice and help to really rewrite the narrative of this place in a good way and in an exciting and inspiring way.
And I think in an authentic way, right?
Absolutely.
You want that mana, the spirit, to really come through.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We've seen so many different takes on Waikiki. And so I think, and we hope that the audience sees the heart that comes through.
Absolutely. You know, everything that we've done in this show, we really have concentrated. Keao actually speaks really well to the fact that as a cultural team, we really designed this show to tell the stories how we would tell it. Because we already knew that in the, you know, in the commercial side of it and the tourism side, which is where we're going to really make a lot of change because we're going to inspire a lot of people that sit in these seats, is the fact that we have to write it from our perspective and tell the story how we would. Because through the lens of Cirque du Soleil, no matter what we do or present, it's going to transcend to everyone in a way, because it's done on the level of Cirque du Soleil. You know, so the tourists, you know, all the our Malihini that are coming, our visitors that are going to come to experience the show, are really going to be captivated and touched. So really, this is our chance to tell it in a way that we want to tell it and share with them in that space that really is the authenticity that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's the true buying about. But maybe, I don't know, you think then the locals here will be your toughest critics?
You know, I think our locals, if they really listen and hear the intention of what we have implemented and really the spirit of what Cirque du Soleil is all about. Really, Cirque du Soleil, which is the circus of the sun, is really about, it's very Hawaiian actually at heart, because when you look at the sun, for us, the sun really is a point of energy and mana, of great mana and power, but also a point of inspiration. And really, that's what all these amazing acts that come from all around the world, these amazing talented artists, singers, acrobats, dancers, bring to the stage, is really to bring a point of inspiration to all those who are touched by the DNA of these shows and productions. And through the telling of our Hawaiian stories, I think, if our kama'aina are really listening to the words, or they're able to hear all of the beautiful mana'o, all the beautiful ike that we have embedded, that experiential knowledge from our, you know, the ike kupuna from our ancestors, to really just the amount of amazing collaboration that we've had between even opening up our home that is Hawaii through that spirit of aloha and bringing in these artisans from around the world and having them, you know, inviting them to be, you know, almost like hanaiing them, right? That idea of bringing them into our family to learn, because they're telling our stories, right? And the only way for them to tell our stories in this platform and for all of this to be successful is we have to open up. We have to allow them the space to work, you know, bring their magic of their talents and our stories of who we are and where we're from, and fuse that together in a beautiful way. And I hope that, I definitely know that I have felt it through this process, that our kama'aina also are touched and feel their heart as well, because each and every single one of them have very deep reverence for our home here in Hawaii, and have really done everything that they can to, you know, they want to do the best. They want to portray the characters as best as they can.
That was designer Mana'ola Yap talking about the mana, the spirit of Oana, the Cirque du Soleil show inspired by Hawaii. We also got a chance to talk to a performer at a preview for the show in December. Salvador Salangsang Jr. was born in Hawaii, and his fond childhood memories at Alawai Elementary School and hanging out around McCully Street in Waikiki. A Cirque du Soleil veteran, Salangsang's traveled the world performing at MGM Grand with David Cassidy, on Broadway with Tommy Tune, and is understudy for a rock and roller, Rick Springfield. His most recent gig was performing in Dubai. He says he jumped at the chance to return home and play the trickster in Oana.
I was born in Kapi'olani, and I was raised on Fern Street in McCully. So when I was younger, it was Grandma would give us a couple of bucks, and we'd come down here to Waikiki and hang out and spend the day as long as we were home by dinner. So coming through Waikiki at that time and seeing the shows that were on Kalakaua and Don Ho and the other shows, and, you know, I was like, wow, it's just amazing. And I would have never thought that I'd be back here performing on Kalakaua.
And you have been with Cirque previously.
Yes, definitely. For a couple of years, I've been with Cirque, but then also I've been with Neil, the director, for the last 15 years of my life. So he's directed me in a show called Le Noir, which is like the sexier side of Cirque. And we toured the world everywhere. I've been around the world about 3 times and many great places. But then we started doing a show called Circus 1903. It's kind of like The Greatest Showman, but live. And so I got to do that show with him. That was in Qatar 2 years ago. And then he told me about 3 weeks after we finished that show, he said, well, there's a show we're doing. It's going to be in Hawaii. And I said, yes, yes, keep talking. He said, it's going to be in Waikiki. And I said, yes, keep talking. And he said, so would you like to go back home and be the clown? And so I got emotional like I do now every time because, you know, to come back home and do a show in Hawaii where I'm from, about Hawaii, with people from Hawaii and being a family in Ohana again. It's really brought me back to the culture and to learn again. And in the show, I play the trickster. And I thread my way through the show and help piece everything together. And my journey starts with me coming back home, knowing Waikiki the way I know Hawaii, but now learning through my ancestors. Don't forget about the old style of Hawaii. And so it's pretty much my story. And at the end, you know, it's just one big Ohana family with a great big rainbow.
And I think, you know, people were hungry for a show in Hawaii like this because, you know, things have come and gone and, you know, Waikiki's changed. But to think that we have a show about Hawaii, about a sense of place, and we want that story to be true.
Yes, I mean, it's great what they've done and the work that everybody has put into it. Aaron Salah, during one of the many creative rehearsals and stuff, I did one part of the show, which was a pre-show that we don't do now, but I did a shaka, and I did this at that point, and he said, don't do that. And we stopped the rehearsal, and I said, oh, okay. He said, you haven't even pulled the islands up out of the ocean. Shaka hasn't been involved and invented yet. So why would you do that? And I thought, oh, okay. So everything, you know, from permission from the elders and Aaron Salah talking to them and working with Neil and Cirque du Soleil to make sure that everything was authentic and right to the islands.
So what's it going to be like when your family comes to see the show?
Oh, I can't wait. My dad and all the Salang Sangs still live here in Hawaii. And my mom and her side's in Texas. So my dad will come and see me hopefully next week or soon. It'll be the second time he's ever seen me before in my life. And my mom will come probably next spring break. And they've seen me perform in other shows, but now to see me in this one, you know, even speaking some Hawaiian or singing some Hawaiian for the end, I don't know. I hope they really like it. I think they're going to really, really like it. It's an amazing show. But I know we're going to be quite choked up. You know, I owe a lot to them.
Well, I think, you know, folks have this sense of pride about being here in Hawaii, calling it home. You know, you were born and raised here. So you know kind of the nuances and the complexities that, you know, a tourist coming into Waikiki may not really understand.
Yes, yes, definitely. And just from walking on the streets and being here and the aina and just the breeze and the mountains and the ocean and the salt water. What does it mean and how it's healing to you and how this island, and I tell a lot of the cast, you know, let this island heal you. Even Hiva told me, our kumu teacher for hula, you know, let this island heal you. Don't be in such a rush. And now getting back into the island life, you know, it's such a blessing to be here. Even to the littlest parts of, you know, the difference between a tourist and a non-tourist is even when that light, when you're not supposed to cross the street, and still it says walk, some people still do it anyway, which is not right. But you see the people that know the island will actually wait for that light to say walk and stuff. So little things to big things, learning again and loving it. I just love every piece of this island.
And is there any shout out you want to give to, I don't know what sparked your interest in performing in theater and shows?
I had to give a shout out to my mom, really, because I was studying to be an architect and did pretty good. And then the chance to be an entertainer came around. And this is when I'm around 19 or 20. She said, well, if that's what you feel that you want to do and you're going to be good at it, then be the best at it. And so she didn't mind that I left the architectural studies behind and literally almost joined the circus. It's so cliche. But here we are. And it's brought me around the world to here back home. it's just every day is, it's healing. Every day is a smile. Like when I leave here and I walk back home, just to know I'm walking on this island and just looking at everybody walking the streets, they're happy. It's a birthday, it's a honeymoon, it's an anniversary. The Hawaiian lifestyle, it's just, you know, Hawaii time, you know, to do that. Walking to work, the same thing. Smelling the food, I miss all the smells of the different food that's here and the cultures and eating. It's, I just can't believe it until I go home and I have a cup of coffee in the morning and I'm overlooking Waikiki and can't believe that I'm a resident again in Waikiki back home. And it's just, it's a blessing. And the show, it's a blessing too, to watch it. I'm a big fan of the show just as much as I think everybody else would be because we get to watch it every day and it never gets boring.
That was Salvador Salengsang Jr., who plays the trickster in Cirque du Soleil's Awana. The cast perform for a crowd of nearly 800 each Wednesday through Sunday at the Outrigger Beachcomber Hotel in Waikiki.
Support for HPR comes from Hawaiian Airlines, now with more destinations in partnership with Alaska Airlines, serving the islands for 95 years and committed to serving Hawaii for the next generations to come. HawaiianAirlines.com.
This Saturday, Hawaii Public Radio's Live from the Atherton presents Honolulu Jazz Quartet. Enjoy live performances with HPR every Saturday in June. Learn more at hprtickets.org. Sponsored by HMSA.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art, opening June 21st, Mary Cassatt at work. Paintings, pastels, and prints reveal how the Impressionist transformed the course of modern art. HonoluluMuseum.org.
Awana, Cirque du Soleil show in Waikiki, is now in its seventh month of its run. With 10 shows a week, the schedule can be physically and mentally demanding for the cast. As the show approached its 100th performance back in March, we checked in with one of the performers to see what the experience was like. Mahealani Kamau hails from Oahu, and she's been dancing since she came out of the womb. She was performing for Disney in Florida when she found out that she'd been cast in Awana. She spoke to The Conversation's D.W. Gibson about performing in the show and reconnecting with home.
Has the show settled into place, or is there still some fluidity in terms of what happens, say, week to week or from performance to performance?
There definitely is both elements. It has settled where we're all familiar with how the show runs and all the different acts and how it goes. And then at the same time, there's still that fluidity because we need the flexibility if a dancer gets hurt or if an acrobat gets hurt or if we can't have a certain act. They have times when artists or the acrobats can sit out and watch a show and then we modify the show for that. So there is still that fluidity and still the creative process happening. They're going to change the opening soon. It's a combination of what we've done through the creation time, that 6-week creation before the world premiere, and then what we're doing now, and we're just combining it.
What does that look like in terms of that change that you see for the opening?
It would include more of the dancers. It would bring us out from the beginning. We do have one dancer that is part of the opening in the beginning. This would just have all the dancers to come out right in the beginning and just introduce us and sort of establish that Hawaii relationship from the start.
When changes come in because of an injury or because someone wants to try something new with an opening of the show or something along those lines, how does that feel as a performer? Does it make it harder to sort of be responsive to those changes?
In a way, it's exciting because when you're doing two shows a night, 5 days a week, over and over, it can sometimes get monotonous. But when we're throwing those curveballs, it kind of makes it exciting. And then it helps us to be able to get back in that creation and figure things out like right on the spot and to do it. I don't know. It's exciting, I think, for me. Not as challenging or as difficult as you might think it might be.
There's something unique about live performance in that, as you said, on the one hand, it's the same thing every day. You're going out there and you're doing the same thing every day. And there might be a challenge there in terms of making it fresh. But on the other hand, it's never the same, right? Because the audience is never the same.
Yes.
And so there's something different about the energy in the room every time you go out there, I would imagine.
Agreed. Yes. When we had an audience that was majority of children, the energy was incredible from the beginning to the end. And it's the same with adult audiences. It just depends. And sometimes the earlier shows, they're more a little more energetic. And then the 8:30 show after dinner or drinks or whatever, they're a little more sleepy. So it's a different energy with every audience. So yes.
Did you get to interact with any of the kids after they saw the show? They can be brutal critics, you know.
Yes, they loved it. I mean, just hearing their reactions through the show, just talking with them after too, they were all very, very excited and happy and loved the show. We talked to the Kamehameha Children's Chorus. That was one that we got to do a meet and greet with. And they're actually on the track, singing on the track. And I also used to be part of the Kamehameha Children's Chorus when I was in elementary school. So it was so neat to have them and to just see their bright eyes and their happy smiles and just grateful for them, but not brutally critical of us.
Good, good. Yeah. I'm glad they were there for you. Talk about what a routine looks like for you. Where does the process begin for you in terms of getting ready to do the shows?
So I get to the theater around 3:45, 4 o'clock, start my makeup. Before, it used to take me 3 hours. Now, with all the practice, it takes me about an hour to do. I'm ready by 5. I get dressed. They do 15-minute calls, 30-minute calls, 45-minute calls to let us know when the show's about to start. We have a circle time that we do with the dancers and some of the other acrobats or whoever wants to join in with us. And we have a little pule time where we just ground ourselves and remind ourselves of the kuleana and what we're there to do. And after that circle time, we start the show and the show goes on 5:30. Then we have our break from 7 to 8:30, about an hour and a half to have a small light dinner. And some of the other acrobats, they continue to train through the break. And then we do the 8:30 show.
Well, and the show, the stage itself is nice and big and high ceilings and a wide open space in which you perform. But I've had the pleasure of going backstage and seeing that it's not quite as spacious back there.
Oh, yeah.
No. Talk about some of the sort of challenges of sorting through backstage and what you do with your time when you're not on stage during a performance to sort of keep in the mindset.
Oh, man. So as you can imagine, there is a lot of traffic in the back in those small hallways. Everything is timed. Everything has to be safe through the creation process. Oh, my gosh. There's so many people involved to make sure that everything runs smoothly in the back. We have the costumers. We have 3 stage managers. We have a coach. We have PMed. So they're all there to make sure that everything runs smoothly in the back. It is tight, but we all make it work. It's like if you have to be on stage left, you have to be there because otherwise you'll be running into everybody else. We just have to keep up with the timing of when we have the breaks, when the trickster is out, when we have time to change. We're changing our costumes. We're touching up our hair, touching up our makeup, doing things in the back. The acrobats, they have to some shower in between the acts because one does a water bowl. So there's all kinds of things going on, but it's really just keeping to our tracks that they set out for us and that we worked out through the creation process to make everything move smoothly in the backstage. Yeah.
Sneaking in a shower between acts. Who knew, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot goes on. They have, yeah, we do maybe as the dancers, we change our costume. We have a base costume, but we change maybe 6 times through the show, different skirts and stuff. and different accessories.
So I bet I could give you a precise time on any given day and you would be able to tell me exactly where you are in this sort of puzzle making backstage.
Yes, actually. Yes, it has to be very precise. Otherwise, like I said, we'll be running into each other and it'll be a big mess. But yeah, everything is organized and set for us.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, every now and then facing injuries or things of that nature. Have there been dancers that have had to leave the show so far, or is the core group stayed there in place?
No, the core group stayed there in place. We just have vacations and lives outside. Some did get injured or sick. So, of course, we'll need backups for that. When we started the creation, it was just us, just the 8 dancers, 4 female, 4 male, and no backups at the time learning the show. So all the 100 shows were really on the core dancers to pull through with that. But again, we've worked out contingencies where we do with 7, how we make it work.
And the show's working to get some of those backup dancers to spell some of you. I'm sure that will be a nice relief.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It will be.
And you mentioned, you know, a life outside the theater, outside the show. Hard to imagine as so much of your energy, I know, gets taken up by the show. But talk about what life looks like outside of performances. Do you have another job that you do? What does your life look like outside the theater?
Yes. So I'm actually a single mother of 2. So that's always a full-time job. And then I also work as a realtor for Nakoa Development. It's a Native Hawaiian development. That one's for-profit. And then we just created a nonprofit called Aina Ho'opulapula. And we help beneficiaries to build on Hawaiian home lands. So I do that during the day. And then I'm at the show at night. I do many other things. I wouldn't say it's a job, but I do work on the lo'i. I farm. I fish. I do a lot of sustainable practices that our kupuna or Hawaiian ancestors did. It was like when I moved home, I wanted to be back home and really like get back into the roots and get back into the dirt. So I do that. And then real estate has helped me also being able to help the Hawaiian people.
Adding up all those activities sounds more like 30 hours in a day. I don't know how you squeeze it all in. I know that there's so much reverence culturally for hula. But I'm wondering about the economic side of things. And you spoke to that there in terms of maintaining another job. Are the other dancers, as far as you know, maintaining day jobs as well? Are some of them able to just simply do the performances in terms of making ends meet, economically speaking?
Oh, no. The other dancers have other jobs. One is a flight attendant. One works in the hospital. The others have other shows that they dance in, many other production and entertainment companies that they dance for. Well, I would say the circ pay does help to support. Living in Hawaii, you always need kind of a cushion or a safety job to fall on or just extra income to have a savings.
Is there anything you can tell us in terms of the pay scale, like how much you guys get paid or if there's a process for sort of bumping up how much you get paid over time?
I would say that for myself, this is the highest paid contract I've had. For the pay here in Hawaii for a hula dancer, it's really, really good pay. They do take care of us and they do value us as artists. Some of us got a full 18-month contract and then some got part-time contracts or like 6-month contracts. I do believe that we are able to negotiate. And initially, we were able to negotiate our rates when they first offered us the contract for Cirque. So I do imagine that when that 18-month comes up and if the show continues to be a success, then I think there is that room to be able to negotiate for a higher pay or more.
Good. We'll keep the fan base notified so we can make noise on social media
yes,
to make sure
please.
You get all you deserve. Well, anything else you'd like to share with listeners about the experience you've had doing this show?
My thing is I hope that everybody who comes to see the show, you know, gets to take a piece of what we are there to show them. It's really just the collaboration of people of all different cultures. We have the acrobats that are international, and then we have us as the home and the connective tissue to the host culture of Hawaii. I just want the audiences to take that home. It's so rewarding, and it's so, I don't know how to, I get chicken skin when we have locals in the audience and we hear the chihus at the end and they give us a standing ovation because they've seen all the shows that have come through Hawaii and everything. And to get that kind of response from the local audiences is really rewarding. And then for the audiences who aren't from here, who can appreciate and who can understand, because the whole show is in our native Olelo Hawaii. So even though they don't necessarily understand what's being said or what's being told, from meeting with other audience members who aren't from Hawaii, and they still appreciate and they still understood the stories we were portraying, that is like the best thing and the most rewarding thing for us to have. And so that's really it. I just want audience members to come here and enjoy, and then to feel a part of our ohana and our stories and what we're doing in Waikiki to resurrect those stories and to bring light and love and life back to Waikiki, because it's been kind of run over by, you know, tourism, the hotels, and everything, and our stories got lost, and what is the foundation of that place. So yeah, that's really what we're there for.
Well, thank you for taking some time today to come and talk to us about it, and good luck with the rest of the shows.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was the Conversations D.W. Gibson talking with Mahealani Kamau last March. She's a hula dancer in Cirque du Soleil's Awana. Well, that does it for this Aloha Friday showcase of our Awana Cirque du Soleil stories. We'd like to hear from you. Call our talkback line. Leave us your comments. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org or comment on Facebook. You can listen back to our shows on the conversation page of the HPR website or on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and D.W. Gibson, with support from Savannah Harriman-Pope and the HPR digital team. The Backyard theme was written for us by John DeMello, our theme music courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation. Oh,